This show is protected by a non-commercial, attribution, no derivatives, creative, commons license to protect the interests of the artists.
And this is Eclectic Mix, show number 81. Hello everyone, this is George, your host. You may be wondering why you're getting a show in the middle of the week. Well, I'll quickly explain. I do like the format of the show where I play the music of a single artist so that you can get to know their music. The only real problem I have is that in doing so, I don't have a chance to go back to artists whose music I've played in the past, and this show is about supporting them. So, when the opportunity presents itself, I'll be doing short interviews of an artist I've played in the past and will play a song they've offered since. This will give you a chance to get a short update on what you heard a while back, and if you haven't heard their music, then perhaps it'll spark enough interest for you to revisit that show. And speaking of Chance, this interview is with Chance. In some respects, it seems like it was only last week, but in podcasting years, 2005 really is a long time ago. On show number 10, I, along with a number of other podcasters, simultaneously presented a concert by Chance and the Choir. Now, I first heard Chance on Insomnia Radio and immediately wanted to hear more. I looked around and was amazed that I couldn't find an internet presence for this guy, so I went back to the Insomnia Radio show notes, and lo and behold, I had been spelling Chance C-H-A-N-T-S, not C-H-A-N-C-E. So Chance and the Choir made sense to me, so I just want to make sure that my pronunciation isn't going to mess things up here.
The people are asking, what's your name? I go, Chance, like Teka, you know, because otherwise they don't get it. That is very funny.
Take us back to the time when you realized that music was something special to you. Was there like one thing that happened, or was it a progression of things, or what?
Absolutely, yeah. It was one specific thing. What happened was when I was 7 years old, my mom asked me if I wanted to play the piano. And I said, sure, sounds like a wonderful thing. Meanwhile, a week later, the piano shows up, piano movers move it in, and I go, oh, that's really cool, I'm going to go play outside. And they go, no, you got to practice, and you got to take lessons, and that didn't make sense to me. I'm like, what? So all of a sudden, I got thrown into a situation where I'm having to practice half hour a day, half an hour became 45 minutes, then became an hour, as I got better, it became hour and a half, and one day I went, you know what, I'm going to grab my little record player and put it on my piano and just start playing some of the albums that I had. And all of a sudden, it clicked. I went, wait a minute, I can actually play this stuff. That's when I knew I wanted to do this for a living for the rest of my life.
Cool. What instruments do you play right now?
I can play a little bit of everything. Guitar, bass, a little bit of drums, piano. Not too many, like, orchestral instruments. I'm sure I could probably pick something up and kind of jerk around a little bit, but nothing that you would call competent.
Okay.
But mostly just the instruments that are in a band I can play.
Okay. And you're left-handed. You play left-handed guitar, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Does that pose a problem?
Yeah, especially when you walk into a guitar center and there are 2,000 right-handed guitars and 3 left-handed ones. It's an absolute issue. You know? But above and beyond that, no. The fact remains that it's just kind of the way it was. I actually learned how to play upside down. I would just flip the guitar, and I could only play a few chords. I actually played bass pretty well upside down. And then finally I sprung for a left-handed guitar and actually bought my very first correctly strung bass just a few years ago.
Okay.
And I went, oh, okay, this is easier to play. And I can still pick up a right-handed bass and pick it up just almost as good, you know, almost as well.
Okay. Now, musically speaking, can you take us through the creative process that you go through when writing a song?
Sure. Well, there's a few ways about it. Number one, I always carry a mini cassette recorder with me. Well, I call it cassette. It's not really cassette anymore, but it's one of the little digital ones.
Right.
And I'm just always humming melodies, guitar parts, and words into this thing ad nauseum. I very rarely start out with words first. I usually start out with a melody of some sort and sort of chisel away from that by just singing a little what I call chantilies, which is just basically gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I'll chisel words, and maybe I'll come up with a turn of phrase that appeals to me, and or at least just point me in a direction. I'm like, oh, okay, this song is going to be about fill in the blank. And then from that point is when I start writing, really sort of recording the parts. And as long as I've got a verse and a chorus, or even a verse, even if I have one section of a song that I love, if it's enough, I'll work on it. But if it's just a lot of stuff that's just kind of sitting there, they'll stay on the mini cassette recorder and they'll stay in my head. I, believe it or not, I do a lot of the work in my head before I start recording.
I'm also wondering if you have like bits and pieces here and there that you may end up putting together at a later time.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, there's a quote by Nietzsche. He basically criticizes artists who feel that all their inspiration comes from heaven or comes from above and whatnot. And the point he was trying to make is that if you look at Beethoven's notebooks, you realize that Beethoven's Ninth was created from many, many weaker melodies or melodies that were unfinished or pieces and parts, and he put them all together and worked on stuff. So I guess the point is, it's all blood, sweat, and tears. So when I write a song, if I'm missing a bridge or I'm just missing some part that takes it to the next level, I will look back at earlier stuff that is incomplete, and I will absolutely Frankenstein stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know? Because let's say there's a song that was just weak and, oh, man, but you know what? That bridge, that pre-chorus thing is just unbelievable. Case in point, the song that I have called Forgive and Forget.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge before the solo is from another song that just never got finished. And I just dropped it in. I actually had to change the key to it, but the lyrics, the melody, and the chords all worked. And now it just sounds like it's supposed to be for the new song, but you would have never known unless I told you, you know? And so I've always told, like, you know, songwriters or even just like up-and-comer kind of musicians to never, ever throw anything away because you never know.
Good. Now, you release your songs individually, and then you put them on CDs in groups of five, and the most recent one is 11 through 15. Is this a marketing decision, or is this an artistic decision?
A little bit of both. Marketing decision from the point of, I do definitely want to separate myself from everybody, and how long have we been doing this whole release an album every year and a half thing? I mean, it's sort of been done before,
mm-hmm.
and my sort of feeling was, well, how do I, not so much recreate myself, but how do I set myself aside from the pack and go, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to release a song every so often, you know, every couple of months, and people will sort of maybe, hopefully anyways, the fans will look forward to it, and it'll just be this kind of long process. And I think also from an artistic point of view, it's kind of cool that they're all connected now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can sit here and look at them in volumes, but there's also this greater body of, like, how cool would it be when I release single 41? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh, sure.
Just sit here and that the fans and friends just kind of grow with me. You know, I think that's just a really appealing thought. So in that regard, it absolutely was an artistic decision.
Okay. And in speaking about separating yourself, you wear a shirt and tie. Is that the reason why you wear the shirt and tie?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I like to say I did my time. And so I was very comfortable wearing the white shirt, short sleeves with a black pants or blue pants or gray pants, depending on the school that I went to.
Okay, well, speaking of that, can you tell us a little more about the members of the choir, who they are, and how long you've played with them?
Yeah, absolutely. The drummer is, his name is Adam Flanders, as we call him, and he's
sexy Flanders.
Stupid, sexy Flanders, exactly. And he actually started with me, it'll be 2 years ago in like a week. And then the other guys are kind of from all over the place. Bob, what's really kind of cool is three out of the four members were sort of fans before they even auditioned. They were either fans of my solo music or fans of previous bands, and when I just kind of let it out there that I wanted to put together a permanent version of this backing band for me, I just started getting phone calls from them, and that really helped out a lot, because I think it's really important, whatever kind of band that you're in, that people aren't in it just to be on stage. They have to breathe it, you know? And it's a difficult thing to require or ask of people if they're not already into it. So when they come into the situation and they're into it, man, that makes all the difference in the world, because you know you can count on, you know, because this is a tough, tough business. And you kind of almost have to want to be here, because otherwise there's just going to be disappointment after disappointment, you know?
Mm.
And so the bass player's name, his name is Bob, and he's from Arizona, but he's been living in Los Angeles for a few years. One of the guitar players' name is Mike, and he's from Victorville, which is about, unfortunately for him, an hour and a half drive from Los Angeles. So it is quite the pain in the arse every time we have to practice, you know?
Mm.
He swears he's okay with it, and bless his heart. And then the last guitar player, I actually met him on MySpace. I was just missing that one last component. I definitely wanted to have two guitar players on stage. So I threw out a MySpace ad just on a lark, and him and one other guy responded within like 3 minutes. And I didn't get any more responses. That's the funny thing. They responded literally just strangely up, and he was the very first person to respond. So I emailed him, and sent me his telephone number. I called him, and I noticed that he had an Ohio address. So I go, hey, man, you're telling me, do you still live in Ohio? He goes, yeah, but I'm moving to Los Angeles tomorrow. I go, are you serious? He goes, yeah. So literally 3 days later, after he kind of, you know, drove through, because he drove here, of course. But after that, he and I got together, and we met, and I gave him the music, and he sounded very into it. And he was even fine with the uniform on stage, and that's kind of where it's taken off. He came to a couple auditions, and he became a member of the choir.
I'm sure that one of these days you're going to start touring. There's just no question in my mind. And when this happens, I'm wondering if you're going to begin your tour in Qatar.
I should, huh? I should. That would be quite the event. Hey, if they'll pay for it.
Maybe you can explain a little bit about your success in Qatar.
There's a DJ there, and I got an email from him. And he said that he downloaded my song, Say What You Will, off of GarageBand. And he said that my song was number 2 on his top 40 countdown. And I thought, well, that's nice. And then he emails me back, and he wanted to speak to me. So I'm thinking, well, what phone number should I give him? I mean, is this just some quack? Is it an internet radio station? Is it just some crazy old podcast where 4 people are listening? Turns out, he calls me up, and we speak, and he's the nicest guy. And it turns out, Qatar only has 1 radio station, and this is their rock show. So their top 40 is just for the entire country. Everybody listens to the same channel. And that's when I went, oh, I see.
That's amazing.
And, I was just beside myself. I just couldn't believe it. So like a week or two later, the song became number 1. It was actually number 1 for like a month. And it's all requests, so people just call in. And since then, he's had 4 of my songs on his top 40 countdown. One of them's on the new record called Push, and I think it's number 4 right now or something like that.
Cool.
But yeah, it's crazy.
Amazing.
What's really funny is Qatar is about, what, the 4th smallest country in the world?
Yeah, it's a little thing.
Start somewhere.
That's right. That's right. All right. We're going to be playing number 16 here in just a moment. Could you set that song up for us?
Sure. Single 16 is called Life and Life Only. I would say the singer is a person who's, I don't want to say at a crossroads in his life, but you know how a lot of people look at celebrities and they go, I want to be just like that? Well, the singer in this song is looking at all of you and saying, I want to be just like you. This singer wants to have the normal mundane life and wishes for a family or wishes for a little house on the prairie kind of a thing. You know, so it's sort of flipping the argument that we all seem to pay too much attention to Entertainment Tonight and stuff like that, and just going, what if celebrities looked at us and said, we want to be more like you? You know, that's kind of what it's about.
Fantastic. The Chance, thanks a whole bunch. Really appreciate it.
And you know what? Thank you for supporting my music and for supporting independent music in general. I can't tell you how much it means to us. I speak as if I can speak on everyone's behalf, and I'm going to. There you go.
Well, thanks again.
You. All right, buddy.
Part of what will make us go is life is always to and fro, and patience never.